You're listening to the On Call Nightmares podcast, and every week I go out of my way to find conversations with technologists who've spent time on call. And this week, I've got another great conversation, and it's with Jacqueline Grinrod. Jackie was someone that I met at DevOps Days Toronto, and we had a great conversation and decided let's bring this over to the podcast. And, Jackie's someone that's worked in fintech and media and currently doing some stuff in e-health, working at a company called MedStack. So let's learn a little something from Jackie today. But before we do that, of course, I'm going to beg you all. I'm going on vacation very soon, and I will need a couple of interviews before I do. If you'd like, please reach out. It's oncallnightmares@gmail.com, or you can send me a tweet at oncallnightmare or at jdestro. So anyway, let's get into the interview with Jackie and learn a little something about someone who is one of Canada's top 30 under 30 developers. Pretty cool. So we'll be right back with our interview with Jackie. You're listening to the On Call Nightmares podcast, and every week I go out of my way somehow or another, find people everywhere in the world, or they find me to have conversations with technologists who have spent time on call. So I was in Toronto recently, and while I was there, I met Jacqueline Grinrod, who is working in fintech, media, e-health at MedStack, which is a digital app platform for the healthcare industry. And you're one of Canada's top 30 under 30 developers, huh?
Yeah.
So can I call you Jackie, or would you prefer Jacqueline?
Jackie's perfect.
Cool, Jackie. So you've been, you know, bursting onto the scene out in Toronto, so it seems, with your big talk at DevOps Days Toronto. And, you know, it's pretty crazy to meet someone who's done as much as you have so quickly. You know, I was looking over some of your achievements already, and I realized, wow, you graduated high school in 2010. So, you know, it's pretty amazing what you've done already, but I'm going to let you kind of introduce yourself. Not only are you one of the people I met at DevOps Days, but you're just an interesting person. So tell me a little bit about what you've done and how you got here.
Sure. Starting from like where I started with my career, or
okay. Yeah, give me a little bit of an introduction about how you got started in tech and your first job that you worked on call.
So we actually have this running joke that I kind of stumbled or face planted my way into tech because I was supposed to be in music originally. Mm-hmm. But the true story was about middle school. I guess we've already talked about when I graduated, so I don't really need to worry about dating myself here. But mm-hmm. I started in middle school doing some HTML on a forum because I really liked writing and I wanted my writing to look a lot prettier. And mm-hmm. then the site that I wrote on went down. So I kind of just made my own site and then promptly forgot about this for a few years to pursue music. And I called my dad kind of realizing that, called my dad realizing this isn't really what I want to do for my career. Can I switch to that like computer writey thing I used to do? And my dad, he's a math and science major, and he just kind of laughed for about 5 minutes. He's like, are you asking me if coding is as viable as being a musician? I was like, yes, pretty much. He laughed for like another 5 minutes and then said, yeah, do it. Like whatever you want to do, I support you. So I went into studying computer science. Got a co-op job, worked as DevOps right from the get-go, and absolutely loved the work. Since then, I've kind of stayed there.
And so this is, you know, I guess while you're still in school, you get the co-op job. Is that right? Is it kind of like an internship that we...
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I figured. I did co-op back in high school, so I thought that's what it'd be, but I just want to make sure that people on the other side who may not be familiar with it. So I'm guessing you went to work a little bit full-time and then also spent full-time in school within your comp sci kind of education, correct?
Yeah.
Cool. So what kind of music were you interested in pursuing before you made the change?
I actually had a full ride to do jazz music and playing trumpet.
Wow. So, I mean, it's interesting how many creatives you meet that get into technology, because I believe that one way or another, we're building things that really require a sense of creativity per se. And you know, you're building, you're creating, you're manipulating, and then you're taking critique on that. And so, in a way, you know, it's understandable how the arts lead many people to tech.
It's one of the first things that I loved about tech was, well, specifically DevOps, you got to see the big picture, but there's a lot of room to be very creative and to try new things, but also a lot of kind of rules that you could follow. And I liked having that guidance, but also the flexibility.
Cool. So you get the job with co-op, then you finish school, and tell
I
me
actually didn't
about.
finish.
Oh, you didn't? Yes.
No, sorry.
Then that's fine. Excuse me for being assuming, because I made an ass out of me. So you move on from school, I should say, and you start working full time. And tell me about where that kind of led you.
Well, I started, I guess the very first one was, do you want to be a dev or a DevOps? And they told me a little bit about both, and I didn't understand them. I went straight into DevOps for the big picture view. And I stayed there for just under a year. And then I moved into the media space where I was the only operations person in our company at the time. So doing, well, I guess the first job was a lot of kind of data centers and using things like vSphere and Zencenter. And the second job was all on AWS. So learning
Great.
cloud,
So you got an early jump in. Go ahead.
learning cloud, building pipelines, learning Docker, maintaining production—pretty much anything that we needed from an ops person.
That's really great. So at what point at this in this role do you end up going into an on-call rotation?
I actually have never been on a formal rotation.
So it's
And
always
just
been
about to go
on.
into my first one. Yeah, it's always kind of been like that. Well, you're the only person who knows how to do it, so just if something goes wrong, we need you and you're on call.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So how's that kind of impacted you as far as like I guess, you know, lifestyle, like being in that, you know, every day you're on call pretty much because you're the person who understands how something works. How do you make that fit into, you know, what you do outside of when you're working?
That's a really good question that I don't think I've actually really thought about before.
It's
I
important for you
really,
to think about.
yeah. Like, I guess the biggest influence was that it meant that when I was building things, I wanted to build them in such a way that they wouldn't call me back later. And when I worked with our
Gotcha.
devs, same thing. So,
So
put a lot of focus
rather
on that.
than so building resolutions before the problems ever really seem to happen, huh?
That was the goal. Didn't always
Cool.
work, but yeah.
So one of the things that we do on this podcast is try to go over stories and listen to nightmares that have occurred. So one of the things I asked you to do basically is to listen to me tell the rules first. And the rules are very, very simple. There are only three of them. And I ask that you abide by them. Is that okay?
That sounds good to me.
Cool. So the rules are do not incriminate yourself because nobody wants you to get in any trouble. Don't incriminate anyone else because in DevOps, what do we say we are? We are blameless. And help us learn because this podcast, it's one big giant retrospective. And so I want you to provide us a retrospective on an incident, and maybe you can help us learn from it. So with that, I'm going to let you kind of take it over here. Why don't you tell me a story?
All right. So in my first 4 months ever in tech, keeping in mind that I've just started working, I actually get, I guess I missed an important detail that one of my friends convinced me to apply for this job and I didn't feel ready yet. So I just started working. I didn't really know things like what is production, what are VMs. I'm kind of learning it on the spot. And we had this very unfortunate series of events that happened where we had two, so our team was roughly, I think, four people that knew what was going on in production, operations layout. And
And what
of
kind of
those,
environment would you say
I'm
you
sure.
are? if you don't mind, just to sprinkle some details in there.
Off the top of my head, I think it was roughly 200 virtual machines that were all manually configured and managed. They were in things like, they were in things like ZenCenter and vSphere. And we had those living in a data center. Given I was a co-op at the time, I don't really know much more detail other than it was in a data center somewhere.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah, and so when we were making changes, we were copy-pasting. It was like three of us going through, copy-pasting the one-line change to kind of make sure we were doing it and hand-holding it through, making sure it went fine. And that's what our upgrades, I guess, looked like.
All right.
Yeah. And so really early into my career, what happened was we had two of the, well, the senior ops guy and our senior architect were both going on vacation at the same time. And when this had been planned, it was going to be fine. But the third team member actually resigned and left the same week as they were going on vacation. So you can probably see where this is going.
Yeah. So Jackie's all alone is essentially with all the brand new work.
Yeah. And I'm just like, this is a bold new world. I don't know what's going on, but I'm trying to learn. And just days before everyone left, what happened was our UAT environment just dominoed over. I say dominoed because we had some redundancy set up and we had failures, but something happened. I don't remember the details, to be honest. Something happened such that the failovers just took out the redundancy and just everything went down for UAT, thankfully. Thankfully not fraud.
Sure.
So everything just toppled over. And we had a couple of days where our senior dev and architect was here. And he was doing his best to kind of give me a roadmap of like, here's things you need to do. Like, you need to get the load balancers back up. And I'm like, what's a load balancer? And he's like, just don't worry about it for now. Just, you know, this is how you do it. Just go. And so he left me this kind of like checklist of things to do. And both the people that were on vacation were completely on the other side of the world for this week that they were gone. And I'm kind of on my own trying to figure out how it's going. Like, I was tapping some devs here and there, like, hey, do you know anything about this specific service or this deploy? But they're kind of like, no, that's the ops job. I don't know what that is, but I can look at it. I can look at it with you and maybe help. So we're all kind of feeling like we're blindfolded shooting at this dartboard, hoping we're just going to hit the board. Not a good feeling.
Yeah, it's tough, and you're basically, you know, trial by fire, as it sounds like. You're thrown right into it, and it's funny, you know, I don't have a lot of conversations with young people much lately that get into businesses that's trial by fire quite as much, and that's because there's been so much organization and practice and procedure put into place, and so it's so rare that someone gets this whole, everything is completely blown to shit. Let's figure it out. So these stories, and if this is pretty, you know, within, I guess, what, the last 5 years, right?
Yeah, I think this would have been 2013 or 2014.
Okay, yeah, so 5-6 years. So we're talking about a time where an organization that hasn't made that full kind of transition over to DevOps still was, you know, providing you with an experience that, I'll be honest with you, wasn't very far off from what, you know, maybe in like 2002, 2003, what a person like myself would have to deal with. So that's it's interesting to hear that, you know, that kind of old way of doing things still kind of leads and it impacts people at every stage of where we are in DevOps. So that's really interesting. So why don't you tell me a little bit more? Like, you're dealing with this. There's people on the other side of the freaking world. Some other schmuck who's supposed to be in charge says, yo, I'm out of here, and quits. Yeah. And then we got Jackie who's like, yo, I'm 4 months in. I don't know this stuff. So you're doing the best. But how are you personally? Like, this is your first foray into this. How are you?
Oh man, I was terrified, to be honest. I was talking to my manager and the CEO, and I'm so grateful that they were very supportive. They were kind of like, you know, we understand if you can't do it, but for our sake, do your best. Just do whatever you can, and that's okay. I think I was working like 10 a.m. to 3 a.m. that entire week, just trying to figure everything out and kind of piecing together.
And were most of these environments like Linux or Windows? Like, where were they in your VM world, or where there was
kind of they were Linux, yeah.
And how much Linux experience had you had prior to this? I'm just curious.
One or two semesters of doing it for my computer science intro classes.
Gotcha. So, you know, not a lot of like production. And so you're learning VMware, you're learning about like infrastructure, you're learning about Linux, all while dealing with people, I would imagine. So tell me,
yeah,
what kind of business was this specifically, that, and what were the customers, and what kind of impact would you say happened to them?
The impact part's hard because I didn't quite have full visibility into it, but we were in wealth management.
Okay.
Again, I'm grateful that it wasn't production. It was UAT. So the impact was really that they were like, we can't test the upcoming features, but we still needed to give them that access. So it was still a pretty critical problem.
Sure. So this is an internal system that is obviously part of your company's ability to, or the company at the time's ability to deploy, to ensure things work before they go to production.
Yeah, and it was a pre-prod, so it was kind of like our clients were actively using it to make sure that they were good with the features before they go live.
Gotcha, like a little bit of canary testing, I see.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's get a little further in. So, you know, I understand you're talking to these people within the business, I would imagine, so because you're also serving the company as a customer, and you're that person that's, I guess, having these conversations internally and telling them, like, this is the situation, correct?
Yeah.
I was going to say, how do you formulate, because you're so early into your career, like a common set of language that you felt comfortable with, or were you just learning?
I was just learning. I was trying to figure out, like, I'm like, what's a DW? Oh, it's a data warehouse. Okay. I'm talking to the devs. I'm pulling in anyone on the floor as soon as I just can't find what the next path forward was. Mm-hmm. I was giving direct updates to our manager as well as the CEO. And I was also giving updates to our clients, which was pretty scary at the time. Just kind of, hey, just letting you know, I'm doing my best. This part's up now. This is the progress we're making. Now I'm going into this part. So I'm going to go quiet again while I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
So what was the eventual resolution, and how long would you say UAT was offline until it finally got back to regular service?
Ooh, full regular service was probably about 7 business days. I got it up to the point that they didn't feel like it was a fire by the end of the week, but I'm sure the ops team came back and was like, oh, this needs to get changed, like, right? It was co-op, so I was kind of just piecing it together.
Mm-hmm. But, 7 days. Yeah, you get it back into 7 days. And now let's talk a little bit about what happens after. So after the whole incident occurs, what's the first immediate thing that your team kind of does? Like, did you really have a formal postmortem, or were you all kind of learning how to do that?
So this is a little bit colored by the fact that I was very new. So I kind of retrospectively looking back and defining, but we did have a big war room meeting and kind of go over what went wrong, what happened, how do we make sure this never happens again. And some really big things that came out of that were we pulled in SaltStack for configuration management, so we weren't going to be manually managing things anymore. We talked more about like having image templates so that we could have something just ready to deploy. Talked a lot about having proper documentation, things like being able to deploy automatically or using, like, I think we use Rundeck and Jenkins to help us start doing things after that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
So it sounds like it really pushed you all to talk a little bit more.
Definitely. This company didn't do things like stand-ups at the time. It was very much so, you know, everyone kind of takes their work and they go do their work, and then maybe we'll talk about it. I think it was once a week.
Mm-hmm. So did this incident kind of have a long-term impact on the way the company kind of worked as a team, would you say? Did it open up new forms of communication? Did it create new ways to work?
That's really hard to say. I was there maybe 4 months longer, which isn't the longest time to be able to see these changes.
Sure.
that some things we pushed harder for, like we pushed a lot harder for having all the code in repositories. So there wasn't anything getting deployed from, say, somebody's machine.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for me, being able to see it, I didn't see too much yet. Like, we started trying to talk more regularly. And like I said, we pulled in the configuration management.
Sure.
But I don't know how much the company changed after.
Sure. Gotcha. Yeah. So let me ask you a little bit. So what impact did this kind of incident have on you individually?
Oh, all the impact.
Because obviously, like, looking back, how did this affect you as someone that eventually, you know, would go on to be a really skilled, you know, technician, a person that can learn, who learned a lot and became somebody that no longer was struggling in these moments? Like, what can you say that really shaped where you went from there?
Oh, I think I took a lot of really key things out of this. One of the first things is documentation. It's important. We need to be able to share and not have these big knowledge silos. So I guess those are two things, but those were two things that came up immediately. The importance of having all of our code in repositories and deploying like stable and pushing and having consistent environments for all the other things that came out. Like not doing manual deploys, having immutable images. All of these were things that I think I learned very, very quickly at the beginning, even though I might not have had the right words or understanding of what the implications were yet. As I continued to go through my career and I saw these things, I was just like, oh, this is it. This is what solves that problem, so I don't have to do this again.
Early groundwork led to you getting better information that grew you as a technologist, if you would.
Definitely. I think it really shaped where the rest of my career went.
That's really great to hear. So I know you're young into your on-call career, but and it sounds like you're going into a formal rotation soon. But let me ask you a question. If you had to give advice to someone that's on call, what would you give to them? What info would you share with them?
I think one of the first things I want to say applies to on call as well as just generally working overtime is make sure it's visible. So if you're doing work, especially like if we do something like on call, we have a tendency to do like 6 hours straight of, I just need to fix this.
Yeah.
But we might kind of say, here's the resolution that we reached, but it's not always as clear how much work it went into it. And if we can be visible about that and start tracking how much time went into it, it might help us to find those root causes and pull those into sprints in the future or be able to actually tackle it properly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important. Another one is if you have questions, just speak up. Like if you're going into an on-call rotation and maybe there's something you don't understand yet, it's always better to ask before it, even if you think it's a silly question, instead of trying to learn it at like 3 a.m.
Yeah, I must agree. And especially early on, if you ask questions before you actually start the rotation, like, hey, where are the docs for these particular projects? If there are no docs, how do we start getting those docs created so that when I'm on call and I see that service isn't working, I can get it back online and not have to bother you? I think that's just such a critical portion of asking questions and sometimes not being afraid to remind other people you missed a step.
Yes, especially because tech, like we talk about standards, but they're often not fully enforced. Mm-hmm. And so there's no clear way that anybody is going to do something. Like every company has their own unique flavor of how they implemented something. Even if it's something like how I used AWS Beanstalk, it might still be very different than another company using the same service with the same intent.
Sure, so, you could have a completely different CI/CD implementation. You could have different settings. You'd be using a different language than someone else. I get what you mean. Cool. So let's talk a little bit more about Jackie. We've talked sure. about the past. Let's talk about the past. Let's talk about you as we kind of wind up. So Jackie, you have, a career that's, I feel like, doing some really cool things. And right now you're at MedStack. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what's up at MedStack and what you've been doing?
Sure. I'm transitioning into a full stack role technically. So I'll be doing, I guess I'll define that too, because that's one of those other terms we all have different definitions of. I'll be doing front end as well as back end work, probably a little bit in database, all with an ops perspective.
Okay.
And for our actual product, we're a platform that goes on top of the public cloud that gives a, I guess, secure and compliant space for healthcare companies and startups especially to be able to just deploy into and get off the ground and running.
Sure.
Yeah, so the idea is that we cover most of their infrastructure compliance and we give them a dashboard that they can kind of check off what services they need, and then they can focus on building their application and solving the healthcare problem that they're focused on.
Gotcha. Sounds like a very, very big problem that needs to be solved. We always need to have compliance within these big systems, whether it's fintech or, of course, med. It's always compliance, especially in a world now where in Europe we have GDPR, and that's become a really good standard for how a lot of other nations across the world should really manage data, period. So that's great to hear. Other than that, let's talk a little bit about any other projects. Do you have any projects or any other things that you feel like you'd like to communicate before we kind of wrap up?
I actually, so for projects, I don't really have anything open source because I used to have a lot of problems with feeling confident enough to kind of go into the open source world. It's big and scary.
Sure.
So I've mostly done private work, but this year's kind of the year, I guess, where I'm kind of trying to get out of my shell and start doing things. So speaking at meetups, speaking at DevOps days, and after this, I'm really hoping to be able to start doing some open source contribution. The one I'm interested in doing is Chaos Toolkit. So I really wanted to start building that in. Sorry.
Very cool. I was saying, I said, very cool. That's a great idea. So obviously it's been really, really great talking with you. And I want to make sure that if people want to talk with you after, maybe they want to share some of their experience or something other that they got from our conversation, how can they find you, Jackie?
Sure. They can find me on LinkedIn as Jacqueline Grindrod. Or they could find me on Twitter as DevOps Jackie, which is new. Twitter's a whole new world for me.
Well, be careful. It's a scary world. I'll make sure that your Twitter gets shared with everybody, as well as your LinkedIn. Jackie, it was really great talking with you today. Thank you for sharing some of your time. And I appreciate very much meeting you over at DevOps Days Toronto. Seems like it's a really, really cool community you've got out there.
Thank you. It's been a great place so far.
Awesome. Well, we'll be right back. Thank you so much, Jackie. We'll finish up the podcast, and obviously I'll beg the next one of you to come on, because that's the thing we need. We need more people like Jackie who are new into the business. I've talked to a bunch of people who have been in for 15, 20 years. I want to hear you people who are, you know, the under 5 to 6 year people who, you know, have found their way in this new, strange, cloudy place. So, Jackie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back.
Well, thank you very much, Jackie. It was great talking to you. And, of course, the big, big part about doing this podcast is meeting people that I don't know, learning from them, and seeing where other people have come from in the world of technology to wind up on call. So if you'd like to be part, like I said, you know how to. I told you in the beginning of the show, but one more time, you can reach out to me on Twitter. It's at JDestro or at OnCallNightmare. And, of course, you can email me. It's OnCallNightmares@gmail.com. I'm hanging out here today with Rico, my pug. He's having a good snore behind me, so please excuse that. But anyhow, once again, thank you again for listening to the On Call Nightmares podcast. And every week, I will continue to find more technologists to have conversations with who spent time on call. We'll see you next time. Yes, Rico. Big old snort. Thanks. Bye-bye.